Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
The Chicago Way meets the Delaware Way. Miranda Devine from the New York Post, author of Laptop from Hell, about that Hunter Biden laptop. Jeff Carlin is here as always. Master of sound, master of cats, master of pies. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, Orthodox Christian, and editor-in-chief of your favorite website for common sense, John Cass News. And where are you, where Barack Obama is pretending not to know what Joe Biden was doing as the bagman, his son, was rolling around on the doing the Delaware Way or the Chicago Way and making that laptop from hell? You're an American, and you've got to pay attention, because there are many people who are trying to get you to not pay attention to what Miranda Devine has written. And I understand why, and so do you, because you're not a Chumbalone, and this is not the Chumbalone zone. This is the no Chumbalone zone. You understand it, why they want you to not to see, not to read, not to pay attention, not to know, because they're in on it. The media helped cover it up. The FBI and big tech, big Intel helped cover it up. You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Well, as promised, one of the most important columnists in the country with the most important book, Laptop from Hell, Hunter Biden, Big Tech, and Dirty Secrets the President Tried to Hide. And our guest, as promised, Miranda Devine of the New York Post. Good afternoon, Miranda. Welcome to the Chicago Way.
Good afternoon, John. Lovely to be with you.
I'm so formal. You guys should have heard us right before Jeff started recording. Anyway, Jeff, so what do you think? We have Miranda. Any questions?
Great. I mean, before we jump into it, Miranda, I know, you know, we're here in Chicago, and John obviously is formerly of the paper, aka the Tribune. But there's some crossover and some serendipity in the two of you, because you have connections to the Sun-Times through your father. Is that correct?
Yes. So my father was editor of the Sun-Times back in the 80s, and I was at Northwestern. I used to catch the train up to Evanston every morning, and I went to Medill School of Journalism.
And there's some serendipity there, John, right? I mean, you were telling me a story off air that...
Well, what happened was that Miranda's father, Frank Devine, the editor of the Sun-Times, was trying to keep Mike Royko at the paper and at the Sun-Times. And I just started writing for the Chicago Tribune, and I was a kid, you know, new kid on the block, scared of my shadow, amazed at all these great journalists with a capital J, and all these people that I found later out to be, you know, many of them, some were really good guys, men and women, and some were just, you know, East Coast phonies, pretenders, you know, and I had to learn that. And so, in the meantime, I got fired because your father could not keep Royko at the Sun-Times, and he came over to the Chicago Tribune with a price. And the price was the price was, besides the salary and benefits and all that, golf clubs and so forth, the price was also that he was going to bring his people with him, you know, his posse.
Sure, his crew, yeah.
His crew. And so,
really?
And so they called me into the office. I'd just written, I think every Sunday we were doing page one story. Every Sunday. That's not bad, once a week, right? Page one. And an investigative story. And they called me in and said, John, we got to let you go. Because Royko's got some people coming over, and these are experienced journalists, and we can't, it would be immoral to keep you because, John, you can't write and you can't report, and we need the space. You know, basically, they just wanted to cut the kid's head off and open a slot so they could hire them. And I never really held your father personally accountable for that, Miranda.
It's good of you, John.
Well, maybe if he'd been more persuasive with Mike Royko, you might have stayed at the Tribune, and they might have turned you, and you wouldn't be the enlightened soul you are today. So really, in adversity comes blessings.
There you go. Silver lining. I love it.
Miranda, the only way I could have stayed at the Tribune is to basically agree to be as woke as they.
Yes.
Although I'd rather scream freedom like Braveheart, and like I know what happened to him because I've done the research, and I really wouldn't want that to happen to me. But basically, I'll scream freedom and fade to black because I'm not going to go woke.
Or freedom,
as, freedom.
As right. Our Kamala Harris says, that she used to say when she was a babe in arms, freedom.
Do you get that energy from your parents, or the thought of, hey, I have to fight for what's right, and I got to get out there? And I mean, when were you out there protesting?
Well, I was in a stroller. I was in a stroller, and so I was out there. And in fact, my mother used to have a very funny story about I was fussing, and she said, Kamala, what do you want? And I said, and this is how she would say it, and she said, Kamala, what do you want? And I said, freedom.
No.
Didn't she steal that from Martin Luther King? I believe so.
Yes. But I mean, really, what's the difference between them?
Well, the difference is that she's the plagiarist and he's the civil rights leader. But
well, she regards herself as being a civil rights leader.
Really, anyway, so tell us about this book, because here's what's going on, everybody. I'm sure you paid attention. If you weren't paying attention to the news, you would not be here on the Chicago Way. Mm-hmm. We've got Miranda Devine from the New York Post. I guess I could call her a colleague because I've written, I think, one or two columns for the New York Post while you've been there. So that's awesome. Like, and I'm still waiting for the check, by the way. but it was fun to do. Anyway, so she's got the laptop from hell. I think that this book is an amazing book, and I think everyone should get it for Christmas, Miranda. I would hope you'd agree with me.
That would be fantastic. And I think especially the people who should get it are people who read the New York Times and the Washington Post and watch CNN and MSNBC and CBS, and just have absolutely no idea that this is a real story about corruption in the presidency. This is the president of the United States who has been running this influence peddling scheme with his family for over four decades, who internationalized it when he was vice president, took millions of dollars from China, our greatest adversary, from Russia, from Ukraine, from Romania, Kazakhstan, you name it. And now he's president. And you know, you wouldn't be really paranoid to ask, is he compromised by China in particular, particularly when his administration seems to have gone soft on China and wound back some of the Trump era sanctions and so on. And so you don't hear a word of that in the New York Times and the Washington Post. It took the New York Times 19 months to acknowledge that there was a laptop and that it was real and that the emails on it were authentic. And they did that buried in the 24th paragraph of a page on like B17.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
That was only one reporter who was kind of doing the right thing. And other than that, you know, then the rest of the left-wing media that basically informs or disinforms 50% of the country, then they decided that it was okay to mention the laptop, and actually it was okay to say, yeah, it was real. But they always had this identical boilerplate paragraph inserted. It was almost like it came from the White House, and it said, there is no evidence that Joe Biden knew anything about what was going on with his son's overseas business dealings. Well,
right,
hello,
right.
That's the whole point of the laptop. All our reporting for the last, you know, two, almost 3 years has been about Joe Biden's involvement in Hunter's overseas business dealings, which were corrupt. So that's the story. That is a story that is in the book and that people on that side of the country need to read, so that they're not completely gobsmacked next year when the Republican House starts holding hearings and you start seeing people testify under oath about the money that was coming in from China and Ukraine in particular into Biden family coffers, money that seemed to benefit Joe Biden. There is some evidence of that. And I think it's going to be a bit of a wake-up call for a lot of Americans who've been lied to and misinformed by their media organ of choice.
And that's why I think the media is so upset and upset with the Twitter files release, because it Jonathan Turley and others have pointed out, and you've pointed out, they helped suppress, they've suppressed your story, the New York Post story. And now they're being found out, and now they're being called to account, and they don't want to be called to account. They'd rather, they'd much rather drink scotch and soda at the White House Correspondents' Dinner and wear their stupid little sashes and so forth at the, Gridiron Club dinner, and I hate both of those things. And rather, you know, they'd rather kiss each other's butts because that's what they do. They're like the chattering class of there must have been the chattering class of Romans when the emperors were about and all powerful, because they're the same thing, the same kind of human, and they're going to find their comeuppance, and they're going to be called out to the people.
Yeah, I mean, I think really the story of corruption is a big story because it involves the president. But I think an even bigger story now has been the cover-up, as you just mentioned. Yeah. And the cover-up was orchestrated by the federal government, by the FBI. So, you know, the FBI, we're seeing some of this in the Twitter files, and I'm told that there will be a lot more coming down the pike next week. So that's good, because I think initially the Matt Taibbi and Barry Weiss, who were sort of deputized by Elon Musk to sort of unearth secrets from the bowels of Twitter, they weren't quite au fait with the nefarious activities of the FBI involved in the censorship. So now they are, and so now I'm told that that they've been looking for FBI malfeasance and may have found it. But what we've seen is that the FBI was having weekly meetings with the social media companies, Twitter, Facebook, but also Google and YouTube and Reddit and the rest of them. There were about seven that they were meeting. Big tech operators, and they were warning, well, we know that they were warning Facebook and Twitter about an impending dump, this was Zuckerberg's words, of Russian propaganda, basically, that was going to come before the 2020 election, and to be on the lookout for it. And he went on Joe Rogan's podcast in August, Mike Zuckerberg, head of Facebook, did, and he said, Well, you know, he was asked, were you told that it was going to be about Hunter Biden and his laptop? And he said, well, look, I can't really remember, but it fit the pattern of the New York Post story. And then we find out at Twitter, even more specifically, Yoel Roth, who was then Twitter's head of site security, had to give a sworn statement in an FEC complaint in a defense of that back in December 2020. And he said in that sworn complaint that during these weekly meetings with the FBI before the 2020 election, the FBI said to be on the lookout for hacked material from a hack and leak operation by state actors, meaning, you know, Russians, and that would happen probably in October and probably involving Hunter Biden. So the FBI was out there pre-bunking our story so that Facebook and Twitter, the instant they saw it, would know, uh-oh, this is what the FBI was telling us about. This is Russian disinformation. We have to censor the New York Post, which is exactly what they did.
Miranda, that's I mean, staggering. The idea of, John and I kind of talked about this on our last podcast together, but the idea that, you know, I look back as a kid, you know, reading about J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI and his malfeasance and things he did with tailing the likes of, you know, Martin Luther King and whatnot. And I see that stuff, I'm like, geez, how could anybody let that happen? How crazy? Like, what a world to live in where that was happening. This strikes me as way worse because it has a much larger impact. And it essentially, I mean, was tipping the scale, no matter what you thought, you know, to say Biden's son is, he's no problem. Don't worry about it. He's
a bag man.
Right.
The bag man. And everybody from Chicago who spent 3 minutes at City Hall in Chicago knows what a bag man is, sees this story for what it is. And Miranda, how did you ever stand up to it? Because the left can be, like the flesh-eating harpies of Greek mythology. And they on Twitter, they befoul anyone's feast and they tear flesh. And how did you deal with it?
I just kept on finding amazing stories, like, for instance, that Rudy Giuliani had been spied on by the FBI, so they knew what to look for. They knew that they had the laptop since December of 2019 because the computer repair shop guy that Hunter had left his computer at, he had contacted the FBI and given them the laptop because he was worried that there was, you know, all this kind of compromising information on it. And specifically, he warned them about Ukraine, and he was worried about the national security implications of all the money that you can see on the laptop that's flown through to Hunter Biden and Jim Biden, John's brother. And so the FBI just sat on that, and we know from whistleblowers that they deliberately, the Washington field office deliberately sat on that information and other derogatory information about Joe Biden that came to them before the 2020 election. And the FBI had this surveillance warrant on Rudy Giuliani's cloud. So they would have seen in August of 2020 the email that came through from that computer repair shop guy telling him what he'd found and that he was concerned about Ukraine and Joe Biden and corruption. And the FBI had access anyway to that email, whether they were watching or on, you know, asleep. Who knows? But they certainly had this covert surveillance warrant on Rudy Giuliani, which they took out on what looks now to be completely false pretenses because they dropped the whole case and no charges gave them back all his devices. But they were, and then they also would have had access to my messages with Rudy in early October of 2020, just, you know, saying, hold off, don't give the story to anyone else. We're definitely doing it. You know, it's a great story. So that would have given them the clue that the Post was onto it and was going to publish before the election. So that just puts an extra sinister veneer onto their concern about pre-bunking. And so, you know, I have no doubt that, you know, I'm being watched. But what can you do? You know, I'm a journalist. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm just uncovering information and I'm telling people about it.
It's obvious you were spied upon by the FBI.
Yeah, I would say so.
They were monitoring your... Here's my belief.
They were still monitoring me, but they were definitely monitoring Rudy. And so, therefore, I got caught up in that.
Right. And they knew that you were going to... They knew about when the post was coming out with its story because of the way they configure the meetings and so forth.
Yeah.
But John, I think you're right. That's a nefarious thing. I mean, that idea that if they knew when this was coming out and there's this, they allude to the FBI that, you know, October, look out, this is coming, yeah. You know, yada, yada, yada. It sounds, you know, too similar to be, oh, it just happened to happen that way. You know, so I don't know coincidences in espionage, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, what we've also discovered from the Twitter files is that James Baker, who was the general counsel top lawyer at the FBI throughout all the Russia collusion stunts, all their dirty tricks to try and get rid of Donald Trump, right from the start, he was front and center. And lo and behold, he shows up at Twitter as their top lawyer or their deputy general counsel 5 months before the 2020 election. Mm-hmm. And the Twitter files have shown us, surprise, surprise, that James Baker weighed in on the deliberations in the morning of October 14 and said, oh, yes, you know, we can't be sure that this isn't hacked material. Ah. And then even better, I mean, if this was a John le Carre novel, you couldn't script it any better.
You wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
If he had written it, you'd be like, oh, what are you smoking,
yeah. le Carre?
You know,
yeah.
come on.
Yeah, this is
down the hash,
extended but... into farce, you know, shark. But no, Elon Musk fired James Baker last week because he realized that he was interfering in the release of the Twitter files. So Matt Taibbi and Matt Taibbi and Barry Weiss had been deputized by Elon Musk because they're independent journalists to go through the Twitter files and release stuff. And I remember being so disappointed after Twitter files one. Matt Taibbi's a great guy, but I just went on Twitter and said, you have been snowed, because he wrote a tweet saying, oh, you know, I've seen no evidence that there was any FBI interference. It's like federal government interference. I'm like, really? Okay. There's a mole there in Twitter. Who's vetting this stuff? It's James Baker, obviously. And anyway, so a couple of days later, Barry Weiss starts asking questions because there's this guy called Jim who seems to be, you know, kind of vetting the files. He's the middleman. And she asks someone else at Twitter, who's Jim? And he goes, oh, Jim Baker. She's like, holy, you know, Matt Taibbi says her jaw just fell to the floor.
Right.
And so they go to Elon and they say, listen, you've got a mole. You've got this FBI mole who's actually now he's interfered with the election. Well, I don't know if they said that, but I am. And now he's interfering with the Twitter files. And so Elon just went in and fired him. And he was asked on Twitter, you know, did he explain himself? And Musk said, not very convincingly. There he goes. But James Baker will show up. He'll be, you know, he'll join Peter Strzok and Lisa.
Oh, yeah.
And John Brennan, James Clapper, all those liars. He will join them on CNN and MSNBC as a highly paid contributor, giving his expert opinion about, you know, how to gaslight the American public.
Well, what happens when you run out of room after gaslighting the people? Is that they often tend, if history tells us anything, they often tend to get angry. And it's dangerous when they realize how badly they've been gaslighted or lit.
Sure.
And I need to ask, though, Miranda, you were asking this right as the Twitter files were coming out. You were asking, I remember reading your account, your Twitter account, or some column you'd written, and you were saying, I can't wait to see where the FBI shows up in all this. And it didn't.
Yes. But yeah, that's right.
At least initially.
And that's why as soon as Matt Taibbi finished his dump, I just said, you've been snowed. And, and you know, instantly, you know, James Baker is the guy that comes to mind. It's got to be James Baker. Although the funny thing is, James Baker was the top, you know, former FBI mole in Twitter, but there are plenty of others. Some sleuth on Twitter dug up from just, and if you just look on LinkedIn, you can see it. More than a dozen former FBI officials who work at Twitter. And then I had just a cursory look through LinkedIn for Facebook and Google. Same thing. Also CIA. So, these social media companies have, they're so enormous. They're so influential and they have just become giant spy operations.
Yeah,
and, and not just for domestic spies. There's, you know, now I've read reports that there are foreign spies, and why wouldn't there be? They were, they were rampant. They were running all over these companies, and the people that worked at Twitter were already left wing, so they were already partial to the things that the FBI or CIA, whoever they were influencing them to do, and that was like deplatform Donald Trump and censor the New York Post. So. Well, you're pushing on an open door there.
Well, wait a minute. If you're running, say, if you're the China spy master, right, and Hunter is involved with tens of millions of dollars with companies in China, and Ukraine also is throwing money, and so is the mayor of Moscow's wife, apparently, why wouldn't you be involved? Why wouldn't you know? Why wouldn't you play in that game?
Well, why wouldn't you? You know, China has a very sophisticated espionage operation, and we're having a debate right now about whether or not to ban TikTok. I mean, it seems, you know, that is a China-owned app that gathers the voice prints and the face prints.
Yeah.
Of Americans and their location and all the stuff that Google does. You know, Google is just a gigantic surveillance platform. So, you know, these very powerful platforms, which if you control them, you control the thoughts and ideas of all America, unless, you know, there might be a few nut jobs that are, you know, off the grid, which I think we all possibly might end up doing. But
we'll end up in a cave, you know, or living on a
And Google is the worst of all. You know, so the search, it's such an insidious influence on your thinking when you search for something that you remember, you know, a story that you remember and just a couple of months ago and it's not there and you think, oh, maybe I didn't, you know, and unless you actually realize that Google itself is a malevolent force that deliberately intervenes in elections. There was a report done by the Media Research Center into the Georgia runoff just recently, and they found that in particular swing counties, Google searches buried Herschel Walker to, like, you know, page four or something, and elevated Warnock to the top of the search. And so, you know, just subtle, and they're not really that subtle, but also, you know, the get out the vote push just to people that Google knew were independents or liberals. It's, you know, they intervened, and there is a scientist called Richard Epstein, a data scientist, who estimates that in 2016, Google moved, you know, enough votes to rig the election, and similarly with 2020. And no one's really taking this seriously. And I don't even know if the Republicans are. You know, that the Republicans, there are lots of Republicans who've accepted donations from big tech, big donations. I mean, Kevin McCarthy's speaker for Silicon, he's a member for Silicon Valley. So, I mean, I'm not saying that he's not going to be legit. I wouldn't want to say that, but I'm just saying that money influences people and politicians, and they're just have not been red-toothed enough about these social media companies, which about big tech, which needs to be broken up. You cannot have a globalist company that that has more power than the leader of the free world, where Twitter and Facebook were able to de-platform a sitting president of the United States. And people didn't care because they're, oh, it's, who cares? It's Donald Trump. He's beyond the pale. Doesn't matter. You know, it's Donald Trump today and it's, you know, put in your favorite president tomorrow.
It's the,
they shouldn't have that power.
It's bigger than, I believe it's bigger than Watergate ever was.
Huge, much bigger.
Mm.
Why is it bigger? To give people an under, I have my ideas, but what should people, when they do battle with their terribly woke niece at the Christmas dinner over
terribly woke
over I'm not saying anyone I know, but you know, over Christmas goose, what should they, how do we approach this as a debating issue? How do you approach it as this resolved? This is bigger than Watergate ever was.
All right. Well, let's break it down into just three sections. One is that Joe Biden lied about during the campaign. That's evident about his involvement in his son Hunter and brother Jim's overseas business dealings, in which they took millions of dollars from our greatest adversary, China, not to mention Ukraine, Russia, etc. He lied about that. He said he knew nothing about it, and there's just reams of evidence showing that he did not only know about it, he met with Hunter's business partners, at least a dozen of them. The White House admitted that when I discovered that the meeting that we initially wrote about between a Ukrainian, Hunter's Ukrainian benefactor that was paying him $1 million a year, that meeting with Joe Biden in Washington wasn't just a little meeting. It was dinner at Cafe Milano in Georgetown that Hunter had organized to introduce his father, then the vice president, to his overseas business partners from Russia, from Ukraine, and from Kazakhstan. And that Russian oligarch, that woman, Elena Bacharina, you mentioned, who sent $3.5 million into a bank account associated with Hunter Biden and his partner, Devin Archer, she was on the guest list, as was her husband. So the Washington Post tried to fact check my story on that, you know, like debunk it. And, and lo and behold, the White House admitted, oh, yes, well, Joe Biden did go to that dinner, but he didn't stay for very long and it wasn't for a nefarious purpose, you know, really.
Sure.
So
just an olive, just one, an olive or two.
just $1, just one little goat. So so that's one. So he lied about his knowledge, A. Two, there is evidence on the laptop that he financially benefited from Hunter's money that he'd brought in. And there's not a lot of it, but there's enough, and there's certainly enough for the money trail that I'm told the Republicans are looking into. They have a lot of access to bank accounts and so on, and apparently it's proving fruitful. So, but what I saw on the laptop was commingled finances between Hunter and his father that were managed, you know, a joint bank accounts, joint debit card. Also, there were some bills that were being paid, Joe's household bills, like maintenance of his, you know, his grand estate in Wilmington or Greenville, Delaware, things like painting, replacing shutters, building a retaining wall, putting in new air conditioning in the cottage on the property that he used to rent out to the Secret Service. That was paid for by Hunter. So that's some evidence that he was benefiting. And then, you know, you've got just the circumstantial evidence, the words that Hunter uses, which is, you know, to his daughter, you're lucky you don't have to give half your money to half your salary to Pop, who's his father. Joe Biden is Pop. And then there's the 10% big guy email. So, you know, Joe Biden is in on the grift big time. And thirdly is the cover up. Now, the cover up is bigger than the corruption story, because, you know, to my way of thinking, influence peddling in Washington, D.C. is just a bipartisan disease. It's just that Joe Biden is probably the best at it. He's been at it longer. And he was from a state, Delaware, that was just uniquely situated to funnel huge amounts of money to a really not very impressive senator, but because all the corporates were headquartered there
right.
in Delaware, there was a lot of money sloshing around.
Joe Biden, Democrat of MasterCard, right? When he was senator.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. And and also Joe Biden, his, you know, if you want to get a bit deeper, his relationship with China has always been curious. Since his very first days as a senator, he got wined and dined over in Beijing. He went to the equivalent of Nantucket, a sort of a hideaway with all the top CCP officials who were trying to impress, you know, this Americans about how open and wonderful they were. And Joe Biden came back and he was, you know, waxing lyrical about how wonderful China was, to such an extent that the Weekly Standard wrote a piece saying how embarrassing he was and that he was, you know, the minister for China and he should shut up. And so, and Joe Biden then became China's number one champion in the Senate. And he was the one in 2001 who, during the Clinton administration, who encouraged his quite reluctant colleagues in the Democratic Party to vote for China to join the WTO. And, you know, China has cheated ever since. But that was that had a catastrophic effect on American manufacturing, on the American middle class.
Labor,
And so Joe Biden was, you know, the big flag bearer. So and so you, then you look through his life and the amount of money that his family has taken from China, the fact that he took his son on Air Force Two into Beijing to meet you know, the Chinese, and supposedly Joe Biden was meant to do some work on behalf of America and its allies to stop China from, this was 2013, from aggressing on, you know, those militarizing those islands in the South China Sea, from stealing America's intellectual property. You know, China had become extremely aggressive, and it was America's time to punch them on the nose. And that was Joe Biden's job. And Joe Biden goes to Beijing and just, you know, swans around and says, oh, you know, talks for hours to Xi Jinping and boasts afterwards about how well he knows him, and gets nothing, gets no, you know, they basically sent planes. The Chinese sent planes over those islands in the South China Sea and were buzzing them while he was in Beijing, just to show their, demonstrate their power, and that America
contempt
and contempt. And so he walks away empty-handed, Joe Biden, but Hunter Biden walks away from that little Beijing sojourn with a 10% cut in an equity firm that was, last time I looked on the documents on the laptop in 2019, was worth $2.5 billion in funds under management. So it doesn't mean he's got 10% of $2.5 billion, but it's, you know, that's the funds under management they have. So he's got 10% of something quite healthy. And, and so, you know, that's all the corruption, but the cover up is even bigger because the FBI is involved, and the 51 former officials who wrote that letter after our story, 5 days after our story was published and censored by Twitter and Facebook and poo-pooed by the New York Times. Those 51 former intelligence officials wrote a letter lying, falsely claiming that the laptop, that our story had all the fancy words they used, crafty words, were earmarks of a Russian information operation. And that was heard by everybody as they intended, as Russian disinformation.
They knew what the American media would do with it.
Right.
They've been practicing this game for many, many years, many decades. They understood manipulating.
And they had a supercharged version of the media and social media where they were already, we talked about it, were influenced and setting up. I mean, the Chinese may or may not have jails put up in our country, right? And how is all this happening over the last 20 plus years? And I got to ask you, Miranda, do you think in all that stuff, as we call, you know, walk like a duck, talk like a duck, it looks, sounds like the Chicago way to me. do you think the Barack Obama knew about any of this? I mean, he didn't know any of this.
Bingo. Yeah, look, he had to have known, didn't he? I mean, he was president, mm-hmm. and Joe Biden was conducting his corrupt business right out in the open, right under Barack Obama's nose. And we know that when Obama's people were vetting Joe Biden, the lobbying activities of Hunter were a real bugbear, and Hunter very bitterly had to quit some of his jobs in Washington because of it, to try and, you know, portray Joe Biden as honest Joe, clean cut Joe. What does he call himself? Middle-class Joe.
Yeah. Middle-class from Scranton. Yeah.
Middle-class Joe from Scranton, the poorest man in Congress.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who wears the most expensive. He's someone described him as, who was it? Fantastic writer who interviewed him back in the 80s, described him as like the Great Gatsby. He dresses rich, and he does. He dresses rich. He has a champagne and caviar tastes. He bought DuPont mansions on a senator's salary.
Yeah, right.
You know, he built his dream home in the one of the most bucolic, most beautiful parts of the country. It's DuPont territory. It's the chalet. Right. Territory, you know. It's chateau territory. Right. On a lake. Custom built by, you know, Pennsylvanian builders that his brother knew. And, you know, everything about that place is bespoke. And, you know, we used to talk about Joe Biden being in the basement during the campaign. You could hear ducks outside squawking. Well, that was his pond or his lake. Calls it a lake, it's a pond that his house is on. And that basement is actually a mahogany paneled, beautiful, handcrafted study. And, everything in the place. He has very good taste. And, you know, this estate that he has, it's got swimming pools and tennis courts and, he's got his holiday house. So this is a guy who lives high on the hog. And he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago way, absolutely. And Barack Obama, at the very least, turned a blind eye. He wasn't, I don't think, in on the grift. I have a feeling that he sort of had a bit of distaste for Biden because Biden was such an obvious grifter. And, it amazing that and a liar and an embarrassment. And so I think, it's interesting when there's a guy called Walter Schaub, who was the ethics czar in the Obama administration. And he's all very apoplectic about how terrible it is that Hunter Biden's selling his paintings. And he always comes out, he's very vocal. And I'm thinking, how come we heard absolutely nothing from you when Joe Biden was taking Hunter on Air Force Two to Beijing?
Right.
Getting on the board of this corrupt Ukrainian energy company and getting $83,000 a month for it. How come Walter Schaub didn't have a problem? But we do know from the laptop, because Hunter complains about it, that the White House, general counsel, their lawyers, so basically Obama's lawyers, were putting a bit of a crimp on their style. They were not allowed to use the White House, Joe's office for business meetings as much anymore.
Well, anyone who thinks that he was living in a basement, like Joe in the basement, think of a basement like in the movie Being There, like that chateau, that great castle. That was the basement.
He is a bit like Peter Sellers in Being
There. Yeah, he is, but he's not. He's Peter Sellers was it was like an innocent creature.
Yes.
There's nothing innocent about this grifter. I see him coming a mile away. I've seen these guys in Chicago all my life. This is the same type of grifter. And it's like, basically, here's the thing. You don't like the fact that I'm making money? Too bad. Bleep off.
Yes.
And if you don't like it, well, I'll get you something that you're really going to like about your family or your friends or people you love.
Yes.
Because I'm Joe Biden and you're nothing. That's how they are.
Yeah, absolutely. You've nailed it. And it's amazing how many Americans are still fooled by Joe Biden. I don't know whether it's because I'm of Irish stock, but or maybe because I've been a journalist covering, you know, corruption and cops for a long time. But I just take one look at the guy and he's a liar. He's worse. You know, he's a real sociopath. And, you know, he's losing it now, obviously.
Yeah.
I can't wear aviation sunglasses. Betty, my wife she's throwing them out. I'm like, where are my good shades? my shooting glasses. She's like, no, I don't know where they are. They're not, and I can't find them because of Joe.
And is that because she doesn't want you to look like Joe Biden?
Right.
Good woman.
Yeah.
Good woman. Speaking of good women, Miranda, it's been great to have you on with us. It really has. It's been a blast. And as we mentioned, too, before we cut you loose, people should check out your latest on the curious timing of the scammy Sam Bankman-Fried's crypto bust.
Right.
It's a very interesting read. It raises a lot of interesting coincidences, as we talk about. There are no such thing as good coincidences.
I'm going to give Miranda an assignment from the Chicago Way. OK, Miranda.
Yes.
How, you know, Chuy Garcia, who's running for mayor as on the progressive ticket, because we have a lot of progressives. I call them Jacobins. But anyway, they're out here, they're running, and he got $200,000 from
2900. Chewy did.
Pardon me? No, 200,000, not 2900
for his campaign.
There was a let's not get into the weeds here.
Yeah.
There was a campaign. There was a political action committee that he donated to Mr. The guy with the welcome back Cotter haircut. And he donated to it. And Chewy got he didn't put it in his own pocket, but he benefited from expenditure of that money. And right. I'm wondering, when is that all going to come out? Because this is the Chicago Way, not the Washington Way, not the Delaware Way. Yeah, I noticed that. The Delaware Way in your book. I'm asking.
So, yes, Sam Bankman-Fried. Well, look, I'm told Elon Musk tweeted the other day that he had donated $1 billion to dark money PACs for the Democrats. I'm told Wall Street people say it's $500 million, like half of that. But, you know, it's a hell of a lot of money. Now, at the moment, we are only have visible in the FEC filings, you know, 28 million or something. But let's hope that the Southern District of New York is honest and they actually do get to the bottom of it. However, I'm a little suspicious about the Southern District of New York because of the timing of their arrest of Sam Bankman-Fried hours before he was due to testify for hours in front of the Financial Services Committee.
Yep.
And, you know, somebody obviously didn't want him to spill the beans. They're obviously protecting someone, whether it's Gary Gensler or who's, you know, SEC chairman, former finance boss for Hillary Clinton. There's something dirty going on. You know, people don't want the full story of Sam Bankman-Fried to come out. He's been infantilized by his parents, whether or not he's on the spectrum. Who knows? But he's, a 30-year-old who is addicted to video games, and that's all that drives him. Didn't even know how the crypto business worked. And his parents are hardcore, you know, Democratic activists, professors
at
Stanford. Yeah, so they've been over there in the Bahamas all the time. They had a $14 million apartment that was paid for by the FTX. His father was on the payroll. So they were grifting off it. And you can't tell me that they weren't fully aware of those donations going to Democrats. They controlled that kid. And I call him a kid because he is a child.
There's
something's happened to his development and he's definitely arrested. You know, he can't, when he's doing interviews, he's so jittery because he can't play videos that you can see him. He's just jiggling and jittering and can't sit still. And everybody who's interviewed him has said that while they're interviewing him, like journalists, while they're interviewing him, he's playing video games. Even when Sequoia was doing this Zoom call with him in the Bahamas to decide whether or not to give him, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, he was playing a video game throughout. And that was written up as being, oh, he's such a genius. You know, No, he was doing one thing. Your brain can't do two things. Doesn't matter how much of a genius you are. We can't split our brains like computers. He was just playing the video game, and Sequoia wanted to give him the money no matter what.
He should get a haircut, and he should come come to Chicago to testify before my committee on how much money he gave to Chuy García and the rest of them, because somebody lost money here. And I got a feeling that a lot of Democrats lost money to support the power interests of the Democratic Party that wanted Sam Banks' Connor haircut money. They wanted that money, and they didn't care that who paid, because they had it coming.
Well, but if you think about it, it's really a victimless crime. How many like mom and dad investors have you heard from? It's been, you know, over a month, none. But what you hear is these big woke corporates, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Sequoia, BlackRock, you know, easy come, easy go. They can just tell, you know, that. So if it is what it looks like, just a money laundering operation, and that is one of the charges against Sam Bankman-Fried, money laundering and campaign finance violation. If that's all it was, maybe it wasn't set up like that, but certainly that's what it became, where these corporates that wanted to donate big sums of money to the Democratic Party basically washed it through FTX. And so that their investors didn't say, hey, why are you giving money to the Democratic Party? We don't want you to be political. They say, no, we just made an investment in this, you know, amazing company.
Right.
And, oh, you know, it was a bad investment. We do make mistakes occasionally, but we've done so well for you on all these other investments. Don't worry. So that's the sort of, like, that's just a very basic way of looking at it. But don't you think that's pretty obviously what it was?
Well, I called my own investment guy just before you got on the phone with us. I called my own investment guy, Terry. And I said, Terry, just tell me that we're not invested with any Sam Bankman-Fried products. And he said, no, of course not. And I'm like, ooh, good.
Yeah. I think a lot of just average investors are not going to be investing in crypto. I mean, maybe it's something, but to me, it just looks like you're putting your money, you're buying air, you know, it's the ultimate
exactly
fraud.
You're buying thoughts. I mean, well, Marina, thanks again. It's been great. People need to check you out on Twitter to catch up on your newsletter and all your great works at the New York Post. It's at Marina Devine. The Laptop from Hell is out now. Get it, read it. It's fantastic. Read.
You'll need it, because as things go, as we go forward in this story,
absolutely.
This is the reference book. I've got it right next to my laptop.
Exactly.
You know, I've got it right next to my laptop. And when I'm watching commentary on this, I go back to the book.
It'll come in handy in 2023, no doubt.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Great to talk to you.
Thanks for being here on the Chicago Way, talking about the Delaware Way.
Thanks, Miranda. John. Thanks, Jeff. Bye.
Great.
It can all end. Just say it. Cry out.
No. How about that, Jeff?
Yeah, that was a treat, enlightening to say the least. I mean, I think we are not going to hear any less about Marina Devine in the coming days. We're going to hear a lot about her work here, because it's like you said, it's like almost a reference piece for the Laptop from Hell. And as soon as the Republicans take control of the Congress, we're going to see a lot of investigations, a lot of names going to come forward, a lot of details here and there. And if you want to know what they're talking about, this is the book to get. So I would definitely recommend it.
Bingo. And great question about Obama.
I had some help.
For Miranda Devine, columnist of the New York Post, the oldest American newspaper, and her book, Laptop from Hell, about Hunter Biden, the big guy, the 10%, and the laptop. Look, if you know Chicago politics, you can pick this up really easy. It's the same story, just change the names. And for Jeff Carlin, Master of Pies, future physics teacher, Master of Cats, and the best sound producer in North America. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, editor-in-chief of your favorite website, John Cass News. Join us again, won't you, as we look toward Christmas on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.